is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
My colleague and friend, Malcolm Hohenlein, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations, and we're very pleased to welcome Jonathan Schanzer, Senior Vice President, Research at Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, to comment on the success of the G20 for trade. Jonathan, I read the headline from CNN. U.S. President Joe Biden, along with leaders of India, Saudi Arabia, and the United Arab Emirates, announced the launch of a new trade route connecting India to the Middle East and Europe through railways and ports. This is utopian, Jonathan. Is it practical to you? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Yes, it's practical. And this is, I think, the long-awaited response by the United States to China's One Belt, One Road, or just simply Belt and Road Initiative. I actually was in China in 2016 when that initiative was beginning to gain steam. And I remember thinking to myself how simply boring that looked as China was trying to connect a number of its allies all around the world. But you fast forward a few years and you see the extent to which China has capitalized on this, and they've formalized a foreign policy that is based on trade. The U.S., I think, has lacked a response. It has lacked a similar strategy for the better part of almost a decade now. It really looked like the United States was lagging behind. Finally, we have this G20 summit where the Chinese and the Russians refused to attend, and the United States finally appears to be gaining that upper hand, or at least responding in kind to China's designs on the world. We are now finally putting forth ideas that will go toe-to-toe with the Chinese, and it now also includes some vital partners. India, of course, is going to be a huge component of our counter-China strategy as the largest democracy in the world, but also trying to pull in the likes of the Saudis and the Emiratis and the Israelis, trying to forge a new Middle East. This looks like a win all around. Now, of course, the devil's in the details. How this is all implemented is the big question. And that, I think, is where we have the fewest answers until now.
Malcolm, you have a question. How much?
Yeah. To what degree is this a response, this initiative, to facing the reality of the growth of the Shanghai Cooperation Council, and even more importantly, the expansion of the BRICS coalition? Is this an attempt to answer that? Because India is central to both of them. And, the failure of Xi to participate in this meeting as a slight or a message to India or to the United States?
Well, I think Xi Jinping realized that he would likely be probably not welcome. Again, you know, India and China have this acrimonious relationship, as I think putting it mildly. You know, we've actually seen border skirmishes between these two countries in recent years. And so Xi Jinping was not exactly welcome there. So I think this was a great opportunity to quite bluntly put a finger in the eye of the Chinese leader and to let him know that the United States allies have other plans, that the United States is willing to lead in this regard. I think your point is well taken, though, Malcolm, that the Shanghai Cooperation Council, BRICS, some of the recent announcements of invitations to other countries to join and expand. These are typically anti-American platforms, or at least platforms that work against American interests. And so this, again, was a hugely welcomed initiative launched by the United States.
The Middle East is not seen, the Gulf Cooperation Council and all of the Middle East is not seen as deeply involved in the Ukraine conflict. Is that an inaccurate summary of what's going on, Jonathan?
Yeah, your observation, John, is, I think, an accurate one. The Israelis are obviously very concerned about antagonizing the Russians because the Russians have a significant military presence, or, I mean, now it's diminished somewhat, but they've been very active in Syria. The Russians are involved in arms sales across the region. So the Middle East has been, and not to mention the potential role of engagement on the nuclear level, which a lot of countries are more and more involved or interested in. And so I think the Middle East has been nervous about the Ukraine situation, but I think that with the United States stepping up, showing some initiative, and really focusing on trade, I think this is where you're really going to begin to see these countries coalesce around Washington's vision. You know, again, I think it's important to note that the U.S., we're not trying to sell American values right now. We're not trying to sell democracy. This initiative looks like it is an attempt to sell prosperity, which is really, I think, that lowest common denominator. And so you don't necessarily need all of these countries to get on board in countering Ukraine or countering the Russian invasion of Ukraine. You just want them to be part of a U.S.-led alliance where interests are at stake.
Malcolm?
How do you explain the absence of Turkey in all of this? It's a key player, a key country, arrival of Iran, working more closely with some of the countries than they had for a while. I know it's mercurial, but isn't it a statement, the fact that they're not part of this process?
It is a statement, and it was noted by Turkey's president, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, who lamented and actually said that there was no way that something like this could even be pulled off without Turkey's participation. I think he's wrong. And I think these countries have all decided that they're going to go around him for various reasons. But I think primarily you've got a coalition of countries here. When you look at the Saudis, the Emiratis, the Indians, even the Israelis, to, I guess, some extent, the Jordanians, the countries involved here want nothing to do with Erdogan's Islamist vision for the world. You cannot forget that this is a guy that has been sponsoring jihadist groups in Syria. He's a sponsor of Hamas. I mean, today we've seen in the news, Reuters, Jerusalem Post reporting that 16 tons of material used in explosive material used in rockets just arrived or almost arrived in the Gaza Strip en route from Turkey. And so these are the sorts of things that all of these countries reject. And even though there are good ties or better ties right now between the Saudis and the Turks or the Emiratis and the Turks, it doesn't mean that they look at Turkey as a reliable partner. And I think this was a clear message to Erdogan that his foreign policies have been backfiring in recent years.
The relationship between Saudi Arabia and Israel is the big question mark. Is that helped by this trade route talk? We have about a minute, Jonathan.
Undeniably, you know, amidst all this talk by the United States, the Saudis and the Israelis of how they may be taking steps closer to normalization. And we've actually seen the presence of Israelis with Saudis in various settings. Things seem to be moving closer to the normalization of ties. This seems to me to be one more step in that direction, giving an indication of what could be should these two countries decide to come together to try to forge a more peaceful Middle East.
And we're a step closer because of this talk. Do you believe that, Jonathan?
I do. I think that, you know, this broader initiative that would link the Saudi, Emirati and Israeli economies together through this corridor proposed by the United States, this is exactly the kind of leadership initiative that all the countries of the region of the Middle East in particular have been looking for.
Jonathan Schanzer, Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, Malcolm Hoenlein, Conference of Presidents. I'm John Batchelor.